Hello and welcome to Mindfulness Music and More with me, Shalini Bala Lucas. As always, it's an absolute pleasure to be here with you and to bring you the fourth season of this podcast, focusing on your mental health and well-being. In this, the second part of the season, we'll be talking to people who have turned their passion into their businesses and careers. We'll be asking them how they keep physically and mentally well and what challenges they have faced to get where they are. So be prepared to be inspired, informed, motivated, and entertained for the next hour as we talk about mental health and mindfulness, play some music, and meditate together. My guest today is the CEO of Spring Valley Coffee, Kenya's oldest premium coffee roaster, a business he bought in 2018. Having introduced the flat white to Kenya, he wanted to combine his passion for coffee and his sense of purpose for people and the planet, and his need to control his own supply. Prior to Spring Valley Coffee, he founded Naked Pizza Kenya, a company he sold to Pizza Hut. Before becoming an entrepreneur, he worked in international finance in the US, Europe, and Middle East for financial institutions such as Credit Suisse and HSBC. When he is not drinking coffee, he is often found in the forests of Nairobi walking his two dogs and is an active member of the EO, where he is currently the president of the Middle East, Pakistan, and Africa chapter. He describes himself as passionate, optimistic, and inspiring. Ritesh Doshi, welcome to Mindfulness, Music, and More.
Hi, Shalini.
So good to have you here, because I've wanted to, as you know, my partner Amar is a huge fan of your coffee, and wherever we go, if he has a bad coffee, he goes, not Spring Valley Coffee. So what is it about coffee that you're so passionate about? Why did you buy Spring Valley Coffee?
Well, I guess it goes back a little bit. I was actually a regular customer at Spring Valley. I live in Spring Valley. It's a 12-minute walk from my house, and I was there regularly almost every day for two reasons. One is I loved their coffee, and I could take my dogs. So two things that were important to me. And over time, I got to know the guys that own the business, explored investing with them, and ultimately ended up buying the business about 4 years ago, simply because I love the product and I wanted to showcase the best of what Kenya had to offer.
Okay, before that, let's just go back a bit. You were the founder of Naked Pizza Kenya. Why did you start that, and then why did you decide to sell that? Because I would imagine nurturing this baby and then having to sell it was quite difficult. What was the process around that?
Sure. So I spent most of my professional life working in finance and private equity, investment banking and commercial banking all around the world. And that was my first proper foray into being an entrepreneur. So I moved back in 2012 to start Naked Pizza. And the why is quite simple. I love pizza and I couldn't get a pizza delivered in a decent amount of time in Kenya before that. It would take anywhere from an hour to 90 minutes to just get a pizza delivered. And anywhere in the world that I've lived, I could get a pizza in 30, 35 minutes. So I said, why not in Kenya? And everybody said, well, you can't do that in Kenya. I mean, you talk to an entrepreneur and say, you can't do that. You're like, well, I'm going to give that a try. So we moved back in 2012 so that I could give that a try. And it took three times as long to open our first store. It took 11 months. Cost us three times as much as we thought it would. But built Kenya's first proper pizza delivery business. Fast forward, I think we were a little bit early to the market. I think Naked Pizza was a fun brand. It was a great product. We really excelled at customer experience, which is something I tried to bring through into Spring Valley. But it was a healthier pizza option, which we were perhaps a little bit early to market. This is before Glovo, Jumia Food, Bolt. I mean, we built a fleet day one, 20 delivery bikes, ended with 40.
Wow.
And we revolutionized that.
And yet today you can order pizza or any type of food that is delivered to your house within 30 to 60 minutes. And that was not happening in those days.
No, it wasn't. I think it's a combination of things. Right. I think one is people wanted to go out. Two is the technology platforms weren't there.
Okay. Which they are now.
Which they are now. But Google Maps, I mean, was really didn't work very well when we came to town. We had to map out Nairobi on maps on the walls in our office.
Gosh.
Printing out big, you know, 8-foot by 5-foot maps, mapping out Nairobi. So the world has moved on. And that space also got super competitive.
Yes. And very saturated, I would imagine, now.
It did. I mean, when we came to town, I mean, it was literally pizza and Debonairs, and we were the third player. And now you've got kind of, you know, all the international players plus a lot more local players in that space. And I quickly realized I came in thinking this is going to be a 15-store market. Very quickly realized at our end, from a price point quality perspective, there's maybe a 3 to a 5-store opportunity. And ended up, we got to the 3 stores and I just stopped having fun.
Okay, and that's really important, right? Because when I talk to you about Spring Valley Coffee and every time we've seen you open a new store, there seems to be a lot of enjoyment around what you do. Do you feel that with Spring Valley Coffee, that it's brought the fun back into your entrepreneurship?
Absolutely. I think it's a different business. I think I learned so much through my first business, and I'm so grateful for having gone through the ups and the downs. But one thing that I really like is kind of that interpersonal connection. And what's nice about coffee is, as much as you love pizza, I love pizza, you can eat it 2 or 3 times a week at the most.
Yes.
If you love coffee, you're going to come in every morning. I see your partner, Amma, come in most mornings.
Really? Okay. Okay, that's where he goes. I was wondering. Okay.
It's where you really get to build a relationship with, you know, with your guests, with your customers, and they're there every day. And, you know, for some people, you fire up their day. For some people, you power innovation. You create an opportunity for people to build connections. And that's really powerful. And it's something that we grow in Kenya. It's something that we export to the world largely in a way in which we have an added value in country. And there's a lot of reasons for that, and there's good reason. But why don't we share the gift of great and incredible coffee here in Kenya? So I'm selfish. I want to keep the best stuff in the country. So if I'm going to drink it, well, then why not share it with the people in the community that I care about?
But it feels to me like it's a lot more than coffee. You just said it's about powering relationships and connections and stuff. People coming to your coffee shop, drinking coffee, and having those connections. But also, you are then sourcing from the best of the best in Kenya, would you say? Your coffee is coming from the best people?
Best is always subjective.
Yeah.
But it's some of our favorite coffee in the world. I mean, most of the coffee that we are sourcing and selling locally is highly competitive, and there are people that want that internationally, in international markets, some of the largest, most exclusive buyers. So we are trying to keep the best product in the country and making sure the farmers get paid the right prices for that. So that's something we're incredibly proud of, but I want to drink a great cup of coffee every morning, and I want to share, you know, and I want other people to as well.
Okay, we'll talk a lot more about coffee and your entrepreneurship. I have one question before we go to your first song choice. Was it very difficult going from the finance world into entrepreneurship? Was that a very difficult transition?
I think mentally I was ready to make that transition. I think it was more difficult than I thought it'd be. I thought I was smart, high performing in my professional job, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be a breeze. And actually being an entrepreneur comes with a whole other element of kind of emotional, mental, you know, things that you don't really think about when you become an entrepreneur. When you're working for someone, and there's a lot of joy in that, but you go home, you get your paycheck. There's other uncertainties,
yeah.
But you get that. And there's, you never really switch off.
And you're not responsible for anyone else, whereas in Spring Valley Coffee, you are responsible for so many people.
I mean, actually, when I bought the business, we had 7 employees. As of this morning, we're at 51. I mean, those are 51 people that we are responsible for.
Yeah.
And that's a huge undertaking, not just for me, but for our entire team.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we'll talk a lot more about that after your first song choice. You've chosen Man in the Mirror by Michael Jackson. Why? I was just saying off air that Ritesh, through his song choices, is showing our age. But why have you chosen this song?
It's funny. A lot of people don't know this story. When I was in elementary school in the US, it was a song that there was a lip syncing competition and they put it on. I tried to sing it. I thought I was incredible. And I was terrible. And I absolutely, absolutely was terrible at that song. But why I thought about it when you asked me these questions about like why I picked this song, it was actually, it's important for us to reflect and self-reflect. And I think I started doing that very late in life. So I think it's, for me, it was a little bit of humility, a lesson in humility at the age of 10, that I thought I was the bee's knees and I wasn't. And as I think about that song today and I think about what that means for me, I mean, self-awareness and reflection has become so much more important to me in the last, you know, 6-7 years of my life.
Okay, well, let's have a listen.
I'm gonna make a change for once in my life. It's gonna feel real good. Gonna make a difference. Gonna make it right. As I turn up the collar on my favorite winter coat, this wind is blowing my mind. I see the kids in the street but not enough to eat. Who am I to be blind, pretending not to see them? Disregard a broken bottle top and a one-man show. They follow each other on the wind, you know, 'cause they got nowhere to go. That's why no one got to know. I'm starting with the man in the mirror. I'm asking him to change his way.
Welcome back to Mindfulness Music and More with me, Shalini Bala-Lucas. In the studio today, we have Ritesh from Spring Valley Coffee, and he's talking about entrepreneurship and good coffee. Ritesh, tell me a little bit about EO, Entrepreneurs Organization, because you said that transitioning was really difficult and being an entrepreneur has a lot of challenges. How does EO help?
Sure. So, you know, when you work in a large corporate environment, there's a lot of constant training, development, human resource support, other support. And when you become an entrepreneur, you're the chief problem solver. The buck really does stop with you. There's nobody else to go to. And it can be quite lonely at the top. And I have always been a little bit allergic to organized groups. I've never joined a country club or a golf club or a religious institution. And when a friend of mine who was a member of the Entrepreneurs Organization invited me to an event, I was skeptical, but I went along. And when I went along, I actually found my tribe of people. And what do I mean by that? People that, you know, felt what I felt. They feel the highs and the lows. They're open to sharing, you know, willing to be vulnerable, but willing to share experiences and not give advice. So, you know, the Entrepreneurs Organization has, you know, 15,000 members in 116 countries around the world. And it's organized in chapters that that, you know, our business owners are members of, and within that sub-organized into what's called a forum, which is effectively a personal advisory board. And to me, that became my advisory board, not just for my business, but also personally, people that we would meet with on a monthly basis, that I could really just share openly with in a safe space where there's no judgment. And that allowed me to open up about my challenges, about the opportunities, and get input on those things. And that's transformed the way that I looked at business. You asked me earlier about Naked Pizza. That group of people helped me get comfortable enough to say I wanted to sell that business.
Okay.
And also explore opportunities before I bought Spring Valley.
Was it hard for you to sell Naked Pizza? Was that a feeling that you hadn't done enough for the company, or were you ready to let go?
I think it was a little bit of both. Okay. I think it was hard because I'm like, I built this. This is my baby. We employ 70 people. We built this great product and this great brand. But I think to preserve some of those things, and the brand not so much, because the people that bought the business, Pizza Hut, they rebranded it, but everybody remained employed. What I was done with is there was bits of it that was hard. There's a lot of mistakes that I made that were a little bit more difficult to course correct given how far we'd gone down the line. And the biggest one for me was really, you know, I had learned a lot, but I just didn't see the larger opportunity beyond that. And then at the same time, you know, selling to a company like Pizza Hut, the timing was right, the opportunity was right, it made sense for me financially, it made sense for the business and for the people that worked with us. So everything came together. I believe everything does come together at the right time.
Sure. Okay. And then having this opportunity for Spring Valley Coffee. Tell me a little bit about who you source coffee from, how the farmers are treated in Kenya, and what we as a nation could do better. Because I know the tea industry has a lot of issues as well. And I'm curious to know whether the farmers who grow coffee have the same kind of challenges.
So you have large commercial estates and you have smallholder farmers, which are kind of at both extremes. When I bought the business, we were sourcing all of our coffees from the highlands of Mount Kenya, so around, you know, Nanyuki, Nyeri, Kirinyaga, where we have some of the best coffee in the country. We've expanded where we source our coffee from. So we still source a lot of our coffee from there, from some larger commercial estates, but also from some small farmers. But we're now sourcing coffee from the Nandi Hills. We're sourcing coffee from South Nyanza. We're looking and exploring coffees out of Bomet, out of Machakos. So there's some really interesting places where you can really showcase some of Kenya's best coffee. In terms of farmers, you know, what's interesting about Kenya is one of the things that's been left behind from kind of, you know, pre-independence times is all coffee in Kenya sold at the auction. So that, you know, the farmer takes that coffee to a mill, that mill goes through a marketing agent, presented at auction. So it's all very transparent.
Yeah.
And people buy coffee at the auction. So what's interesting is we have direct relationships with our farmers, but we have to buy it through this process because that's the legal process of buying. So we have the direct relationship, but we're not buying directly.
Okay.
But what it means is we're able, because of full traceability, we're actually able, exactly at auction, when I'm buying a coffee, we know exactly where that coffee came from, which farmer, which week it was actually picked and milled. I mean, we have that level of traceability in Kenya. It's been there for a very long time. What's wonderful about that is this full transparency in terms of what price is achieved in the market. The challenges that farmers face here are like anywhere else, but especially here. Global warming has had a huge impact.
Okay.
In terms of it's dry or it rains too much. Mm-hmm. And that has affected crops over many years. You have issues around payment cycles. And that is one of the challenges with the system that we have, in that farmers get paid so late sometimes by the time the coffee goes to auction and then it gets sold and then they get paid. There's a little bit of a gap in that cycle. And then the cost of inputs. If they are using fertilizers or things to enhance yields, those things are expensive.
And those things are going to go up now, right? Fertilizers and fuel and things like that, which are going to affect coffee prices. So how do you manage that as a business? Because will your prices go up as well?
So it's interesting. I mean, coffee prices, you know, since the beginning of last year have spiked over 100% globally.
Wow.
So the Kenyan coffee price and global coffee prices are informed by what we call the C price in New York. And, you know, last year there were a number of events that happened in Asia and in Latin America, mainly in Brazil. So in two large kind of coffee producing regions, that crops were destroyed. So as a result, there's a shortage in the market. And because of that shortage, the overall price of coffee globally has gone up, including in Kenya. So that's amazing for the farmers.
Yes.
as a business, that's a little bit more challenging, and we have to be creative around that.
Yeah.
But the farmers are getting all-time high prices. Well, I wouldn't say all-time. They're probably nine-year high prices. Okay. If you look at the last decade, some of the highest prices that farmers have achieved. So it's incredible that they're getting those prices. That's also driving a few more people to go into farming or to plant coffee again. The problem is they won't see the benefit of that for 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
And prices may be at a different point.
Yes.
So it's a little bit cyclical. For us, we really want those direct relationships so we know what price is getting paid to the farmer, what they're getting for that coffee. And it's really important that we do that because that's what encourages. If you look at youth unemployment in Kenya,
sure,
given where it's at, agriculture is a great way to help address that, but you can't do that unless people can earn meaningful incomes.
Yes.
We're seeing a lot more youth going into coffee, a lot more younger people going back, taking over their grandparents' farms.
Which is fantastic because it's new blood coming into it, an industry, an age-old industry that Kenya is known for.
Correct. And what we're seeing is places where it was traditionally grown, maybe closer to Nairobi, Thika, Muranga, that's all being uprooted because of urban sprawl from,
yes,
Nairobi. But there's a lot of new coffee being planted. So, okay, you look at like the Nandi Hills, I mentioned Machakos, Bomet. People are growing coffee in places where they wouldn't, or Kericho, or places that are traditionally tea country. So there's younger people that are being a bit more dynamic, a bit more innovative. Some of those farmers are even saying, hey, can we mill here? Can we roast here? So they're trying to add a little bit more value rather than just picking coffee.
Okay, it sounds fascinating. I can see how, I never would have thought I'd meet somebody who's so enthusiastic about coffee. You know, so tell me, describe a good coffee to me.
You know, it's interesting. I get asked a lot, what's a good coffee? What's the best way to have coffee? And I always say to people, the best way to have coffee is however you enjoy it. My mom likes a cappuccino with 2 sugars.
Okay.
And I like my flat white straight up.
So you're quite happy putting milk in coffee?
Absolutely. I mean, look, as a coffee professional, I drink my coffee black when I'm evaluating coffees.
Yes.
For my daily morning coffee, my team knows, they bring me a flat white, which is a double shot of espresso with a little bit of milk. And that's how I enjoy my coffee. So I always say it's how you enjoy it. There's no right or wrong.
So you're not a purist when it comes to coffee. That's good.
Well, I'm a purist to the quality. I'm a purist to how it tastes and how it should taste. And,
yeah,
and you know, what that ratio is of coffee to milk, of froth and the crema. But I think, unfortunately, a lot of these industries, coffee like wine, there are elements that can become a little bit snobby where people are like, it should be like this. It must be like this. And no, it's actually how you enjoy it.
I love that. I think that's very down to earth. Tell me, what do you think of instant coffee?
There is a place for it. There is a place for it.
He's such a diplomat.
You won't find it in our cafes, but instant coffee, you know, something has to be done with the lower grades of coffee that can't necessarily be sold at a more kind of commercial or premium rate. So it means that there's very little wastage. The beautiful thing in coffee is there's virtually no wastage.
Okay.
Everything from the really premium end of what a farmer farms down to the things that are cracked have value. So a lot of those things end up going into instant coffees or into blends. Instant coffee makes coffee accessible for many people.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, a coffee that's perhaps more traditionally roasted ground can be expensive and inaccessible. And there are people that just need that quick fix of energy, sugar, and, you know, and there is a market for it. And there are people that want that. And that's absolutely fine. Many people begin their coffee journey. I look at my dad. He began his coffee journey as a consumer drinking instant coffee.
Yeah. Sure.
So I think there is a place for it. So absolutely nothing wrong with it if that's what you enjoy.
So there's no need to be snobby about instant coffee. I'm saying this particularly to Amar, my partner, who's extremely snobby about instant coffee. Let's go to your next song choice, Ritesh. It's Dangerous by Roxette. Why have you chosen this song?
You know, I think everything in life is a risk. And for me, it's about living on the edge. I was living the dream in my finance world, having this great career as an international banker. And it's about taking a risk to come and do something different. Even in that banking role, I've always been a bit of a risk taker. I'm like, I don't want to sit in London or New York. That's why I went out to a place like Jordan. For me, it's about taking risks. And it's funny, when I look back in life, I don't regret the mistakes that I've made. I don't regret the errors. I don't regret the things that I've done, even if they didn't go so well. But I do regret the things, hey, maybe I should have tried that thing. Maybe I should have done that. And it's about just living just at the edge of your comfort zone for me. And that's a dangerous space to be because it could go wrong. But I bet the house a couple of times and I'm happy to bet the house. And I think it's important to do that. So yeah, it's about being a little bit dangerous in life, both professionally, not irresponsible, but I think you can live dangerously.
Live on the edge a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, let's have a listen. Welcome back to Mindfulness Music and More with me, Shalini Bala-Lucas. Ritesh, we talked about prices briefly before we went to your song choice. As prices are rising, what are the implications across that kind of chain?
So, you know, we touched on it a little bit. Farmers are getting a better price today. That's cyclical. It is affecting everyone in the value chain. I mean, our prices, you know, we have held them pretty steady through COVID. We're going to have to raise them fairly soon, because otherwise it's just not sustainable, and especially when you're paying farmers a premium for that coffee. And what's interesting is, on the one hand, you have customers saying, oh my God, your prices have gone up, but then let's do more to help people. And trade is a way to do that, and supporting people through industry. You know, we have a committed kind of price differential to our farmers over the market price, and we can only honor that if we're able to charge, you know, slightly higher prices. So we sit here and talk about the quality and the value of coffee. So, you know, we're non-negotiable on our prices. But I think it's being willing to pay more for what you're consuming and being aware of what you're consuming.
Because you are, a lot of that money is then going to the farmers. So it's very fair trade in that way, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the word fair trade has been a slightly overused
yeah.
in the world. But I think it's just good business practice. It's doing business ethically. I mean, there's a reason we've had the same two long-term farm relationships for 13 years. There's a reason that everybody we've introduced continues to do business with us, because today prices are sky high. That was not the case 3 years ago, and they still continue to do business when things weren't so good or when they were. And it's because of the relationships that we've developed and the prices we've committed to and paid. I mean, an example is during COVID, demand dried up. Our business fell 90%. We honored every single contract
wow.
at price and volume for our farmers. During that time, and that's built the relationships that we have today. So even when there is a shortage and a lot of the coffee is being exported, they're holding our coffee aside.
It's very much about building relationships, isn't it? And yeah. I think that's really important. Where are your shops in Nairobi and around?
So our original cafe is after the name Spring Valley
at
Coffee.
Spring Valley.
It's in Spring Valley, in the Spring Valley Shopping Center on Lower Cavite Road. That's the original location. We're in a couple of malls. We're in Village Market and Westgate. We're in Safari Links Terminal at Wilson Airport.
Yes, I got very excited when we were flying a couple of years ago. I took photos and sent them to my mom and said, my friend owns this.
And we're in Karen, and we're actually building a new roastery very close to where we are. Actually, in staying true to our spirit, actually, you're the first person I'm telling this to publicly.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We are actually building in Spring Valley. So we're building a roastery just 900 meters from where we are. It's important for us to stay in the neighborhood. We're a big part of that community. We have been, so we don't want to move very far away. So we're moving our roastery down the road. So we'll open another cafe there as well.
That is so exciting. Wow. You're really expanding. How do you find the balance between expanding too fast and expanding enough to meet demand? I mean, I would imagine that's a fine balance.
It's a fine balance. It's often out of balance.
Okay.
We, you know, a lot of it's demand-led. Customers are like, hey, I can't drive. I mean, Karen was very much people saying, I'm not going to drive all the way over there for coffee. And a lot of that, and we see our delivery sales. So there's areas where we don't have cafes where we'd love to, but we need to find the right location for our customers. It's really demand-led, customer-led, where people really keep asking for it.
Okay. And did you say you have any outside Nairobi?
No, we don't.
Okay.
No,
all of our cafes. Is that a plan?
You know, it's something that we explored. Again, back to, we'd actually opened during COVID, willing to try things. We opened in Nanyuki.
Okay.
We realized that perhaps wasn't the best thing for us to do. We tried it. We're willing to give it a try. Ran that for almost a year. But have decided to focus on Nairobi for a number of reasons. One is just the cost and the time of monitoring outside of Nairobi is difficult.
Yeah.
Two is we have some great partners there that serve our coffee. So we'd actually rather support them, work through them in areas that are difficult for us to manage and for us to really focus on our home turf.
Okay, and just really focus on Nairobi. But your coffee's available in tourist destinations and lodges and all sorts.
Absolutely. I mean, everyone from, you know, Elawana to Angama at the lodge and uses our coffees, Richard's Camp in the Mara, people as far north, you know, up in the Matthews Ranges, people like Sarara, and then up and down the coast, and a lot of hotels and restaurants in Nairobi. You think about a lot of Nairobi's leading restaurants, from Le Grenier en Pain to Cultiva to old kind of, you know, stablemates like Zen Garden and Hob House. All of them use our coffee. So it's available across Nairobi. It's available in supermarkets, you know, like Zucchini, like Chandarana, and a lot of small kind of neighborhood supermarkets as well, like Karen Provision Stores or Monty's.
That's amazing. You're across really loads and loads of different shops and industries in a way, if you look at it, retail as well as tourist industries. It must get quite stressful.
It does.
You took a moment there.
Yeah, it does. It definitely kind of takes its toll. It's easy to just keep going and keep working. I mean, I'm very, very fortunate. I'm very grateful. You know, over the years, we built an amazing team. We have a fantastic team in our organization. We're 51 people as of this morning. We have a leadership team of 7 people that really, you know, are the best at what they do. And that's really helped take kind of the pressure off and allows me to focus on the things that are most important to me and that are unique to kind of my skill set, which is spending time with our farmers, sourcing our coffees, and telling our story.
Yeah, it sounds fascinating, but as you said, it does get stressful. How do you look after yourself on all different levels, on your mental well-being, your physical well-being, and your spiritual health as well?
So I'll start with the physical one. Physical one's the easy one. I'm a runner, so I'll run anywhere between 4 and 7 times a week, from short distances, you know, to kind of medium length distances. By no means a marathon runner, but it's my quiet time. I'm the only one there. It's me and the road, or me and my music. Bring the dog sometimes with me.
We've got to talk about the dogs. Tell us what they're called. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, we've got a little Cavalier King Charles Spaniel called Bailey, and we actually have a golden retriever called Biscuit, and she's actually the color of the biscuits that we serve in the coffee shop.
Oh wow!
Hence the name.
And you're on Instagram with Bailey and Biscuit, aren't you?
They're on Instagram. I think I'm just a hired help.
And you taking them on walks and stuff must keep you fit as well.
It does. So essentially, that's a little bit more kind of that spiritual kind of getting into the nature space. So, well, I take that back. I think it's more mental. Okay. So taking them to walks down into the forest, just being in nature, is my mental kind of quiet time. And I'm there with them, you know, with the leaves, with the mud, with the water running. You know, we live in such an incredible place, you know, in Nairobi, but just in Kenya where we can do that. So for me, it's just getting my mental space is getting out into nature or even out to the beach. But just being in nature is where I find my solace and often where I'm the most creative.
Okay.
But spirituality is interesting. It's, you know, I was a staunch atheist.
Yeah, okay.
And I perhaps I'm still an atheist, but I used to call myself agnostic bordering on atheism. And I said that's kind of neither here nor there. So I don't have any religious beliefs, but I've definitely become more spiritual in the last 6 years.
What's caused that? It's very interesting. Why have you gone from atheism to agnostic-ish to spiritual? Because spiritual is a belief.
Yeah, and my belief is that there is, you know, energy out there in the universe, that there may or may not be a higher being, I'm not sure, but there's definitely energy that's out there. When we put things out there, when they definitely come back. And for me, it's the energy that I'm putting out, it's the things that I'm visioning, that I've seen have come back. And some of those learnings have been through friends of mine. I mean, we did an incredible course together on mindfulness.
Yes.
That, you know, very early on in my journey helped me. And you know, I, for example, in the morning, I've got a pretty rigid morning routine.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Because I know when we did the course, mindfulness course, and it was a mindfulness course that I facilitated with men from EO, actually.
Yeah.
It was very, very fascinating because there was somebody in Pakistan and somebody in South Africa and a couple of people from Kenya. And you were the one who always came having done the home practice, even though you have a phenomenally busy time. You said you were very rigid in the rituals, kind of in the morning and evening. You would do the journaling. Do you still do all that? Tell us a little bit about your morning.
Yeah, absolutely. So my morning routine, I'm up at 4:45.
That's crazy. But anyway,
luckily I have coffee to keep me going through the day, so I'm okay. I've got my own supply, so I'm good. But I wake up and literally, you know, the first thing I think about before my feet hit the ground is what is my purpose in life. And I think if I'm reminded by that, I think having clarity of vision, having clarity of understanding what my why is.
So tell us, what is your purpose in life?
It's really interesting. I didn't know. I turned 40 last year. I didn't know what it was until a few weeks after I was 40.
Okay.
And it's to be a catalyst of connection to empower transformational change in people's lives.
Oh, I love that. Say that again.
To be a catalyst of connection, empowering transformational change.
That's amazing. Do you feel you do that through SVC?
I do. I feel I do it through my personal life. I do it through my business. And I think I did it through my business before, but I wasn't aware that I was doing it. You know, my wife reminded me recently that I probably introduced 5 or 6 couples that have ended up getting married. Now I don't know if they think, I don't know if that catalyst of connection is good or bad. We'll have to ask them. But it's interesting because I've done that through my life. I do that through my business. And today at Spring Valley, it's interesting. We provide a space and a platform where people can connect one-on-one over a cup of coffee. Or that connection could be with their own thoughts. They could be sitting having a hot cup of coffee at home as they think about, as they're journaling, as they're before or after they're meditating. And for me, it's to empower that. Change has to come from within. I used to think that my purpose was to create opportunity, but it's not. It's not my job to create. People have to create opportunities for themselves.
Sure. Yeah.
But I can provide, I can be a catalyst in that process.
Okay, great. So going back to your morning.
Morning routine. Up at 4:45, really kind of remind myself of my purpose before my feet literally hit the ground. I don't use technology until I get to the office. In terms of WhatsApp, email, I will use my phone. So I do two things. There's one new addition to when we last spoke. So I'll wake up. I will first I'll read for 10 minutes, something inspirational, something interesting, something uplifting always in the morning. I'll read for 10. I will then journal for 10 minutes and I'll meditate for 10. Now, the order of those things may change, but it's literally my 10-10-10 routine.
Yes.
So I'll journal for 10 and I'll meditate for 10. And I've just introduced a 10-minute breathing exercise and doing a lot more breath work. So that's a new part to that. And then I have to do anywhere between 30 minutes and 45 minutes of vigorous exercise to really get my heart rate, my blood flowing. So hence then the run happens after that.
Okay.
Come home, shower, have breakfast, and then head to work. And I literally will not use my technology. I try at least until about 8 o'clock, until I'm in the office.
That's incredible, because most people, the first thing they do, even before their eyes are open, will reach out to their bedside table for the telephone, for their mobile phones. That you just keep it out of the room.
So I keep it either in a separate room, or mm-hmm. if I have to keep it for emergency at times, I'll keep it. But it's on silent. There's literally three people who can get through to me when it's in between those hours. Luckily, I live with the other three people that can reach me. But for me, I actually bought this traditional alarm clock with the bells that jingles really, really loud. Those really old school ones. I've got one of those. I think it annoys my wife and the dogs. but it's interesting. I end up waking up without the alarm most days.
But that's also interesting, because most people will say, I need the phone in the room because it's my alarm. But actually, you're saying, go buy an alarm.
Yeah, I used to think that. And I'm like, no, if you need an alarm clock, buy an alarm clock. I don't need a phone.
It's fantastic. That's such interesting information about the 10-10-10, because that's a really great way to start the morning. Yeah. So tell me, let's just go to your quote before we go to your next song choice, because I'm conscious of time, because you're so interesting. And I didn't think coffee would be this interesting, I have to tell you. You have chosen a quote by the founder of Starbucks, Howard Schultz. And he said, in times of adversity and change, we really discover who we are and what we're made of. Why does this resonate with you?
I mean, the general sentiments resonated with me for a long time. And obviously, Howard Schultz is a thought leader in our industry. What's interesting is I'd read one of his books even before I was in the coffee industry. And that's always sat with me. And I'll give a more recent example. I mean, but one of our core values as a business, and that I personally try and live by, is to do the right thing. And why that one resonates with me today is, during COVID, we had decisions to make. And we said, well, how are we going to handle this? And business was down, as I mentioned, 90%. A lot of our customers were shut. We had commitment to suppliers. At that point, we had 30 members of staff. And we said, what are we going to do? And we made the decision to keep everybody employed.
Okay.
We said, we're going to keep everybody. If we're going to go down, if the business, then everyone, including me, is going to deal with that.
Take the hit, yeah.
And it's important. And I think, you know, that was character building. For me, for the organization, I think that built the character and the DNA of who we are today. And people appreciated and valued not just keeping their jobs, but getting paid in full during COVID, when other people were really struggling. They perhaps had more pressure because they may have had a partner or a family member that had lost their job, so they were supporting more people. I mean, with our customers, it's about how we behave. And we had a lot of suppliers that were hounding us for payment, which, you know, felt really bad because of what was going on. We turned around and called many of our customers who had shut, a lot of the camps, the lodges. And we actually said, you know what, don't worry about paying us. In fact, give us the product back and we won't even push you for payment because our cafes are still open for takeaway.
Right. So you were able to use the product.
We were able to use it. We were able to be not one of the people putting pressure on, but actually taking pressure off our partners. And for me, it's how you behave. It's great when the going's good and the tide is rising. It's easy to all be kind of, you know, high-fiving everybody. What do you do when the lights are out, when the doors get locked, and how do you behave in those situations? And I think that's character defining.
I think that's very inspirational. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. I love the thought of taking pressure off when everybody else was putting pressure on in a really difficult situation anyway. Let's go to your next song choice. It's Perfect by Ed Sheeran. Why have you chosen this song?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, I just like it because we have this romanticized view of what's perfect in the world, things that are perfect, and that talks about a relationship. But in reality, I think nothing's perfect. Everything's actually imperfect. And that's the only perfect thing in the world. Everything's imperfect. Everything has a gray area. And that's okay. And the beauty is actually, I think for a long time in my life, I'd say probably for the first 30 years of my life, I was so concerned and obsessed about the destination.
Yes.
And I wasn't really enjoying the journey.
Journey, yes.
And the journey is going to be imperfect. Well, trying to get the destination is perfect. The journey is perfect because that's what's meant to be. That is what's meant to be. We're living in the present. We're living in the now. So it is perfect now.
I love that. Well, let's have a listen to the song.
I found a love for me. Darling, just dive right in. Follow my lead. I found a girl, beautiful and sweet. Well, I never knew you were the someone waiting for me. 'Cause we were just kids when we fell in love, not knowing what it was. I will not give you up this time. All I own, and in your eyes, you're holding mine. Baby, I'm dancing in the dark with you between my arms, barefoot on the grass. We're listening to our favorite song when you said you loved. Whispered underneath my breath, but you heard it, darling. You look perfect tonight. Well, I found a woman stronger than anyone I know. She shares my dreams. I hope that someday I'll share her home. Carry more than just my secrets, to carry love, to carry children of our own. I'm
Welcome back to Mindfulness Music and More with me, Shalini Bala-Lucas. And in the studio today, we have Ritesh Doshi talking all things coffee, meditation, and his lovely dogs. But today we're going to do a meditation that I actually taught you, Ritesh, on the mindfulness course. It's a mantra meditation. Man means mind. Tra means instrument, so the instrument of the mind. And we're going to use the mantra Soham, which is not religious. All it is the Sanskrit term for I am. So sitting comfortably, closing your eyes or lowering your gaze, whatever you feel safe to do so. Bring your attention to your breathing. Breathing in and breathing out through your nose. Honoring every breath into your body and every breath out of your body. Deepen the breath. Slow it down. And then on the next in-breath, think or imagine the word so, and breathe out the word hum. Breathing in so, breathing out hum. So, hum. Making your breath deeper, slower, and your mantra longer to match the breath. Breathing in so, breathing out hum. And you can carry on doing this for as long as you like in your own time, but for now, bringing your awareness back into the space you're in, back to my voice, and slowly opening your eyes. That must have felt so short for you, Tesh. This is radio. We can't do it for too long. How is that for you? Do you enjoy meditating? Do you find it easy, hard?
I do. You know, I used to find it really hard when I first started. I'm like, I can't do 2 minutes, 3 minutes, five minutes.
I remember.
I struggled. And the other day, I did a 20-minute meditation on my own, and I just didn't realize where the time went.
Yeah.
It's interesting. You say, do I find it easy or hard? I think there's different points in my day. It's very much for me a morning thing.
Yeah.
But if I'm having a tough day, I'll also step out. The other day, I was meditating in the car for 5 minutes. I had a very tough conversation, and some of my staff, you know, weren't really sure what I was doing. But it was just interesting. It really regrounded me. But what's interesting is, if there's a day or two that I'm running a little bit late, I've skipped it. My days, I'm always just a little bit off kilter.
Yes.
I'm not saying I had a great day or a bad day, but I'm always off kilter.
Yeah.
If I don't do my morning meditation,
it just grounds you and centers you. It's very interesting. And actually, 1 minute can be very powerful, as you know, because even just taking, like you said, 5 minutes in the car probably changed the way you looked at the rest of the day.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, very powerful. Ritesh, finally, if I were to cast you away to a desert island and you could only take one book with you, what would it be?
I'd actually take a blank book. I'd take my journal.
So you wouldn't take anything to read?
No, because I think I get bored. You know, I get bored quite easily. So I think about one book, I have to read it more than once.
Yeah.
I would probably get a little bit bored. I'm a big believer in that we have the opportunity to shape our own future. So I'd be more interested in actually writing a book.
Okay.
Rather than reading one.
All right. Well, I'll let you have that. It's an exception, but definitely let you have that. And if there was one song that you would want, what would it be and why?
Waka Waka by Shakira. It reminds me of a very fun time in my life, which is obviously when the World Cup was happening. It's a very energizing song. It's one of the songs that's on my morning run playlist.
Yeah, I absolutely love it.
And frankly, if you're stuck on a desert island alone, you need a bit of energy. You want to have a bit of fun. And you can dance and there's nobody watching.
Okay, so you'll dance like no one's watching.
Yeah.
Okay, well, definitely we'll play that. And your luxury item?
It's a tough one. I would say my dogs are a luxury item. I don't know if you let me have that one. If I could take my dogs, I would take them and then I'm good.
I can't really deny you taking your dogs now, can I? That would make me sound like a horrible person. So you can have them, but what would your luxury item be?
I would actually take a coffee machine. I would, it doesn't have to be a fancy one. It could just be a very simple French press or a plunger. And I just would love to be able to make a great cup of coffee every morning.
I wouldn't expect any less of you. Of course, that would be what you take. Thank you so much, Ritesh. It's been such a pleasure talking to you. I'd like to present you with my book, Happiness: Is It Simply a Mindset Shift? As a thank you for appearing on the show. To all my listeners, this book is now available at Textbook Center and Raffle Books in Kenya and Amazon worldwide. It's full of meditations, actually, stuff that you've learned.
Oh, fantastic. So, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Is there a final message you'd like to share with our listeners, Ritesh?
You know, I think one thing would be just the power of having an open mind, the power of vulnerability. I think if I'd asked myself when I was 20, would I be an entrepreneur? Would I be meditating? Would I be journaling? I'd be like, no way, absolutely not. Like that's what the hippies do. And I think I've opened up my mindset. I'm a lot more open. And I wish I had been earlier in my life. And I think putting that judgment aside and just being open to things and just saying yes to things in life. I think I say yes a lot more than I say no. I mean, you asked me, you know, if I'd come on this show, I wasn't sure, but actually it was yes. It was an easy yes.
But it was interesting because I said to Omar, he's not going to be able to make it. He's so busy. And you came back to me within a few minutes saying, amazing, yeah, I want to do it. Yeah. And I was like, fabulous. This is how I want all my guests to be.
But you know, part of it, for me, I've come to that point, I think, in my life where if it's not a hell yes, then it's a no. So okay. Either I'm going to say hell yes to something and really give it 150% and make the time for the things that are important, or then just say no.
Fair enough. So I think we will definitely come to your coffee shops because that's something that I recommend everybody does. I have to say I'm more of a tea person, but when Amar is drinking his coffee, I do always take a little bit. I love it. So how can people reach you and know more about your coffee on social media?
The easiest one is Instagram, which we're on at Spring Valley Coffee. That's the easy way to see kind of what we're doing on a day-to-day basis. We can be contacted through there. If someone needs to reach me, they can also reach me through there.
Your Spring Valley Coffee Instagram is very informational, actually. I've started learning about coffee on there because you talk about beans and things that I never really knew about. Is that something that you're consciously doing to try and educate people?
Absolutely. So, you know, we believe that the marketplace can be noisy. You're trying to sell a product. And we're actually like, we don't want to sell a product. We want people to understand and appreciate good coffee and what can be done with it. And then whatever coffee, if you're enjoying coffee, that's a great starting point. And hopefully at some point people will appreciate and enjoy ours. But first, let's just share the knowledge and the experience of coffee that we have the benefit of being able to do every day.
Okay, fantastic. We've really learned so much about coffee. Thank you so much, Ritesh, for coming on the show. And also talking about your challenges of running a business and how you keep mentally, physically, and spiritually well. Thank you for sharing that.
No, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
That's good. To all my listeners, if you or someone you know is struggling with any mental health issues, please do seek professional help, whether that be a counselor or a doctor. You can also open up and share your feelings and mental health issues anonymously without fear of judgment on Bonga, www.bonga.or.ke. This is a safe space where you can start the healing process. Please also follow me for more mental health tips, mindfulness meditations, and lots more on my social media at Just Joom. To play out the show, Ritesh's final song choice, which we all love, Waka Waka by Shakira. I'm Shalini Bala-Lucas. I'm grateful to all of you for your time today. Thank you for listening. And until next week, stay happy, be mindful.
Choosing your battles, pick yourself up and dust yourself off and back in the saddle. You're on the front line, everyone's watching. You know it's serious, we're getting closer, this isn't over. The pressure's on, you feel it, but you got it all, believe it. When you fold it up, oh, oh, and if you fold it up, eh, eh. Tamina, mina, sangalewa, cause this is Africa. Tamina, mina, eh, eh. Time for Africa. Listen to your guide, this is our motto. Your time to shine, don't wait in line. If I must hesitation. Today's your day, I feel it. You pave the way, believe it. If you get down, get up, oh, oh. When you get down, get up, hey, hey. Tamina, mina, sangalewa. This time for Africa. Tamina, mina, hey, hey. Waka, waka, hey, hey. Tamina, mina, sangalewa. Anawa.
quicker.